pals.
Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Throwing the Pow.
My name's Marcus.
My name's Tom.
My name's Frank.
Oh, that felt yucky, didn't it?
That felt wrong.
Love it or hate it, we debate it. It being movies.
Yeah. It being movies, not each other.
Yeah, we don't debate it. Well, we do debate each other, but we don't debate about each other.
Mm. I think that's the subtext of every episode, actually.
It is, yeah. It's a critique.
And it's mostly text.
On our personality.
Yeah.
Welcome to season 3.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. Jesus, yes.
Big event. Massive moment
season
for us.
Season 3.
We don't need to remind you. You all know. It's season 3, baby.
I don't know if I've ever done this before, but...
Good throwback. We can't believe we've made it this far.
Yeah. Yeah. We should all go to dinner at the Three Seasons later.
Frankie, Valley, and the Three
two
Seasons.
Two cucks.
Walk like a man.
Season 3.
I don't know what we're
talking about. What are we talking about?
Raging Bull.
Raging Bull.
Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese.
Robert De Niro. Hey. Yo.
You talking to me?
It's the wrong movie.
You talking to me? That's The Lion King. It's good.
Yeah, I'm a boxer. You talking to me?
1980. Rated X.
1980. Black I didn't realize white. It was this old. I'm going to be honest with you.
That's why it's in black and white. It's so old. Mm.
Sure. That's it.
That's the first time Martin Scorsese ever picked up a camera.
Color TV was after this, right?
Color TV.
Yeah.
1980.
Is that the, what is that, the Dire Straits song?
Dire Straits, yeah.
You know, I
know. No, whatever tangent you're about to go on, just don't.
It's the Weird Al version.
Okay, hold on.
The Beverly Hillbillies, where he covers that song. Gonna move to Beverly Hills, that is. Yeah, it's the only version I know.
Glad we went on that tangent. All right, Throwing the Power. On this podcast, we rate films out of 11.
We do.
Why is that?
Why is that, Tom?
If you have a raging hog and you need to pour some water on it.
We're gonna have to cut this gap out.
No, keep going.
11 ice cubes is just too many. Like at that point, in fact, really 3 or 4 is kind of your limit there. At a certain point, you're just throwing ice cubes at a big old
hog,
big old dong, big old hog. That's why it's called Raging Bull. They saw De Niro naked and they're like, "Whoa, look at that raging!" You got there.
Actually sweating.
Okay, so we rate films out of 11 because Robert De Niro pours ice on his dong.
Yeah.
And you said that you can't have more than 11 ice cubes.
You shouldn't use 11 ice cubes if you're doing that.
How is that your thought process? I'm sorry.
I was watching the
delusional movie
and that seemed like the right thing to talk about.
You were insane. 11 punches to the face?
Nah,
something.
He definitely takes more than 11 punches in this movie.
Okay, shout your name if you like this film.
Marcus!
Tom.
Figured.
Oh, who could have seen this coming?
I'm going to poo-poo the whole thing.
I tried.
No, fair. You did try. You turned it on. You turned it off.
Black and white? Are you kidding me? I'm bored.
Spent as much time with it as he did Kill Bill, which canonically he definitely watched.
I definitely watched.
Yeah.
I've watched all the films.
It's weird you're colorblind too and you still struggled. You know what I mean?
Hey, I don't see color.
Yeah.
You want to start with your score?
Yeah. 3.
Ooh.
God, if only we had a noise for that.
What is this, the start of the season? 3.
That's so low.
It's not, what's enjoyable about
it? Okay, well, we'll get there.
There's a couple of things I'll talk about. Okay, so scores from you two.
10.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, it's a great movie. I don't think that's that controversial, honestly.
No. Okay, one of the classics, I'm sure. But.
Yeah.
9.8.
Yeah, nice. You want to get a good drink?
Not bad. Yeah. No, all right.
Good visual gag there. The De Niro mouth.
De Niro.
We're going to be doing a lot of De Niro mouth in this one, I think.
Which makes it hard to speak, honestly. Yeah. So it's mostly going to be a visual thing.
De Niro can't speak very well. You barely understand him in this movie.
Oh, that's what a weird start. Well, you can't be starting with that as a note.
That's what I just started. It's my first note. He can't really understand him.
You can clearly understand him.
He's just not. I think that's just a Bronx accent, though.
Yeah.
I cannot fathom it. I can't sanction it.
You can't sanction his buffoonery.
Yeah, very good.
Golly gosh.
Please tell me what's good about it. I just want to hear what's good about it from your perspective, and I will try and be open to these thoughts and feelings.
I'll start real quick because I know that Tom's probably got a lot to say on this.
Yeah.
I have never seen this film before, and this was a first watch for me.
I didn't know that.
I picked it. Let me just say that much.
This is always on my list to watch. And I knew that it had a legacy behind it as well. This is a masterpiece disguised as dad cinema. is my take from this, all right?
I mean, it sounds like a good take, but it doesn't make sense to me.
It got until almost the end of the film and I went, I'm actually into this. I did enjoy that and I do get it. Because most of my notes were almost critiquing it in a negative way of like, it's the anti-Rocky and there's a lot of like cliches and tropes here or like – or flip on them almost.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a really good way of
putting it. It's a reverse boxing film. It's not a boxing film.
No,
this is not a boxing film. It's a
domestic violence.
You are going to be so bummed if you put this on to watch a boxing movie. Not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pacing, is a bit sort of at times a drag. I get it. I can probably see why Frank hated it because he's just so punchy. No pun intended.
Good.
Yeah, you did.
Thank you.
Not only did you intend the pun, the word pun is in the word punch. Kind of layered that.
But this film is a really raw depiction of, like, obviously dealing with what?
Nothing. I read one of my notes that made me laugh. So
okay. Don't worry.
Can't wait to hear that one.
I'll continue.
Yeah, you like it.
Dealing with rage and just sexual insecurities.
Yeah. Controlling your partner.
That there's a lot of themes through this that we can unpack if you want, but I don't.
But what does it do with them? Does it just show you how bad it is and look how much his life just sucks because of it?
Well, I think you take such a poorly depicted person in this and you show their spiral. I think that's what this entire film is about. I think that Scorsese was obviously, I'm guessing, in a really bad place during this or in a really good place.
The worst place.
Oh, really?
Okay. You have nailed that.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't doing well.
This feels like Scorsese's passion project almost, but it feels so it's so emotionally driven by what's going on in his life at the time as a director. Mm. And I think De Niro and him have such a great dynamic.
Didn't De Niro read the book and he wanted to do it?
Is that correct?
Quite early on. Okay, sure. De Niro read it, I think, while he was making The Godfather Part 2. We can get into like some of the Butler's Pantry stuff behind the scenes later. But suffice to say, Scorsese came to this movie at a very shambolic period of his life.
And that checks out.
And
that
shows, yes, is reflected.
Yeah.
I don't think it's weird that you dislike this. And this is not one of those movies I come in... I was thinking about The Godfather a lot watching this because, and weirdly, your reaction to it, Frank.
It kind of becomes a mafia film at one point.
It's got the lightest of mafia touches for a Scorsese film.
Sure.
When you're kind of like, it's there, but it's very like textual or sort of like it's peripheral.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you didn't love The Godfather, Frank, just recently when we talked about what you actually gave it. I thought you gave it a lower score, but you did actually, you gave it like an 8-something. You quite liked it.
Yeah.
But you didn't love it, and that's fair. There is an attitude I have with The Godfather where even though I think you don't have to love it, I kind of watch it and I'm just like, there's such majesty here. There's just such scope. There's such variety, even though there's nastiness. It's a really like incredibly involving and moving story.
Yeah.
If I watch this with someone and they're like, you know, I found that really unpleasant and didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be like, how come? I'd be like, yeah, I get it. It's Raging Bull. It's an unpleasant film. Yeah. It is difficult being around this guy and being stuck in his frame of mind for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's pummeling, unpleasant.
Good pummel.
Thank you. It's good pum. It's really, really moving for me still. It's very engaging.
At what point are you emotionally moved? And I've got one scene that I'm sure you'll bring up, but to me,
this is through the lens of his obviously spiraling madness or spiraling into madness, right? You get like, okay, let me talk about the opening shot because I thought I had to go back to the opening shot because I knew there was something about it that was so amazing.
It's incredible.
But I couldn't put a finger on it until
you mean
I watched
the shot where he's black and white in the ring?
When he's shadow boxing in the ring.
Slow-mo, right? And it's that operatic song, which I can't remember the name of it. It might be from Madame Butterfly, I think, but it's just that beautiful sort of Italian opera playing.
Yeah, so there's two things here, right? And you've hit it on the head. This, the entire film, I'll go back to this scene in a sec, sorry. The entire film is operatic in a sense that I don't think, like obviously he has, but it's almost like Scorsese's never actually been to a boxing match before. It's like he doesn't know what boxing
he
is.
He really
it's,
didn't.
It's
he
filmed, really it's filmed like a dance. It's filmed like a choreographed sort of.
And of course De Niro would know, but I think this is why it's obviously very intentional, a lot of the things that are done. Because it occurred to me, I was like, well, no, like one of my first notes was like, bro, put your gloves up. What the fuck is going on? Mm. Every boxer in this film is just taking the heat. No one puts their gloves up. There's no one defending. There's no rhythm to it. It's just a show of strength,
right? Look how constantly, long I can go, yeah. And then I'll come
and
back.
And it turns into this self-flagellation sort of, is that the word?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like it's a punishment or an abasement. Like
De Niro constantly drops his gloves and just says, go, go, go. He wants to be hit. There's an earlier scene with Pesci. Hit me. Hit me in the face. Yeah. I don't want to hit you.
Take off the tea towel. Really hit me. Come on.
And so he's constantly punishing himself because he needs to feel something. He doesn't know how to deal with his rage in Ball. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's got to use some ice cubes.
Yeah.
Back
to the opening scene, this shadow boxing scene. And symbolism sometimes, I'm really in the zone when it comes to symbolism in films, and other times I completely miss it. In this instance, that opening scene says everything you need to know about the entire film moving forward. And that's why I had to go back and watch it, because you've got, he's in a ring shadow boxing, right? Who's his biggest enemy? Who's his biggest opponent?
Shadows.
Himself.
Elf. Darkness.
Shadow boxing in this spectacle of like there's no one around him. It's like shadows in the background, flashing lights. Fighting. He's caged into this ring by himself. It looks like a prison almost. Ooh. It's in slow motion. There's opera playing in the background. There's so much going on in this one opening shot, and the rest of the film, I was like, fuck yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It's a good take. I think you're right.
Yeah, this is purely about him dealing with or not dealing with his emotional downfall and obviously his very obvious flaws. Mm. Everyone around him is just living life. And they're all and we don't also De Niro, super understated in a film where he has quite an aggressive and angry dude. He's underplaying a lot of it because a lot of the reactions we're getting about who he is as a person is coming from Pesci and Kathy Moriarty and everyone else. We're reading their reactions to him and going, yeah.
It's so true.
I'll stop talking.
It's how they always direct people when you're meant to play a terrifying character. Often the director will say, you just do you and everyone else has to react to you.
Yeah.
That's what makes you terrifying. If you overdo it, it comes across as a bit comical or a bit arch. But if you walk into a room and everyone gets tense, that's the indication.
And even they're underplaying it.
Oh, yeah.
They're not reacting in the way you've just described, in a way that's like, what's he doing?
And Joey's really good at being frightened of De Niro or frightened of Jake. So Joe Pesci plays his brother Joey.
Mm.
And Joey's frightened of Jake in certain moments. But at other times, he's really abrasive with him. You fat fuck. Like, look at you. What are you doing to yourself? You know, get out of the fucking way, you know. And he's telling him off. Or when they're in the boxing ring at one point when they're training, he starts really hitting him because he's mad at him. And Joey can kind of let loose on him. You know, there are moments in the film where it's very scary to be around Jake when he gets that look in his eye.
Mm.
But there are other times where Joey's just like frustrated with him and had enough of him, you know. Kathy Moriarty as Vicky, she doesn't really have that leeway. She doesn't have that option to ever talk back to him, you know, because that threat is always hanging there.
There's a couple of very select moments.
She does, but like there's almost always
it's quickly
there's almost
out.
Always it's punishment or consequence.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
She doesn't really most of the time have the avenue, except for right near the end of the film maybe. But I think that this film is about monstrosity in humans. And I think that's what a lot of Scorsese's films are about. And I think that's why he's the greatest director of all time, because he doesn't show us people who we inherently have to sympathize with. He shows us what monstrosity does to people and how it warps them and how...
Yeah, you look at most of his protagonists and they're not good people.
Taxi Driver, that's Goodfellas, that's Cape Fear, that's The Departed, Killers of the Flower Moon. His best movies tend to be about, not exclusively, but they tend to be about people who have an obsession or have a fixation on something and you recognize them trying to bear the brunt of their own malevolence and their own ferocity, and it's very difficult, and that doesn't make them people that I don't feel pity for the person. I feel pity for the effort and I feel sympathy for what it's done to them, and that's what Raging Bull does to me. I watched Monster again the other day. You guys seen that, Charlize Theron? It's you've seen Monster
Market? Yes.
That's a movie about a woman whose humanity became too much for her to bear, and she had to become a monster, right? She had to let go of her humanity to survive after what the world had done to her. And this is the inverse. It was really weird watching it right after Raging Bull. This is a movie about a man whose monstrosity becomes too much to bear. And by the end of it, he can't account for it anymore. And he can't hold on to it. It's too late, in my view. Scorsese talks about how this is like there's actually hope in this movie and optimism. And a lot of people talk about watching it with a lot more optimistic view. I love this movie. I come away from it very, like, it's a very dour ending.
You feel very down.
Yeah. I do not at all go, I think Jake's going to be okay. Like, and it's crazy to me that Jake LaMotta had so much to do with this movie. The boxer who's at the subject of it, who was the middleweight champion from 49 to 51. Mm. He had so much to do with it, and that he would have been like, yep, that's the picture about me. I'd have been like, my dude, like how, that's pretty fucking raw for you to take that, you know?
But the worst thing for me is that, I don't think he does learn anything, or I don't think he does inevitably come to being accountable for his actions.
There's like one moment of remorse in the jail scene.
But that's what I mean. Yeah,
But then it's like what end, right? You don't really see a change. You don't see – there's no resolution. And obviously I don't like the darkness of it. I don't like the violence of it because there is no – reward for sitting through it as an audience member. And
sorry,
that's what we
have
right?
talked a lot. Hey, I want to know why you don't like it. Sorry.
Well, that's kind of it. I get to the end and I'm like exhausted. And for what reward? To what end am I? What did I just sit through that for? To see Robert De Niro beat the crap out of everyone in his life, you know, physically and verbally. It's like, why am I meant to enjoy this? He's not. There's no charisma or charm or likability to the character.
Mm.
I get it. It's an exploration of darkness within and all the things we struggle as humans.
Mm.
But I don't care. I'm watching a movie and I would love some form of entertainment, just a little.
Well, I'll ask you a question then. Is that what you as a viewer need out of a film? Like, do you have to have a positive resolution to a film to enjoy the film?
Not a positive resolution. Some sort of resolution though, some sort of closure or results, you know, it just felt like, all right, Jake's the same.
Yeah. No one mourns the wicked.
But it's to actually see it happen like that is exhausting. And I didn't like him from the start. I didn't like the performance. And I don't.
Do you not think that in itself, though, is thought provoking and maybe you're just feeling a bit empty? Like, even Tom and I have admitted we feel empty after finishing it.
Yeah, I feel wrung out by this movie.
Yeah. And maybe I should watch it again, knowing what I'm going in for. This is my first time watching it. And I was like, expecting a bit more of a boxing film, a bit more of a Rocky, a bit more of a triumphant.
I think I was too.
Something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I just wasn't ready for it and I did not enjoy it. And
my epiphany occurred later. It wasn't until the very end where I was like, because I felt exactly the same way you're feeling.
I don't think it got me enough to even be like, I was sad for everyone involved in terms of the characters, not the actors. I think.
Sure.
Joe Pesci is great in this.
Mm.
I really like him being kind of normal. You know, he sort of gets really excited in his career after this. Yeah, a bit wired and a bit more like playing high-end characters.
Yeah.
This is pretty normal for him. De Niro is playing a flat battery.
So, I just wanted to jump on like a couple of minutes ago. You said you don't really enjoy the performance.
Not at all.
That's a very difficult hurdle.
I know.
It's 90% of the movie. And so I get it, like, if you don't like, it really is just like if you were like, oh, well, black and white films aren't for me. It's like, well, not a lot we can do with this.
Scorsese, I say it like that. He's a genius. He's an incredible director. Of course he is. He barely misses. I love his work. And this looks great. It looks great. I think it's paced pretty well for what it is. I think the soundtrack, although it does sound like Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Dude. One of my notes, honestly.
It kept playing. It's uncanny. I was like, why are they, what? Somewhere.
Yeah.
I was like.
And then it, yeah. Did you not catch that at all?
No, I didn't. And I've seen this movie many times.
Insert.
That's not a thought,
insert
should,
right exact, here.
I should listen to that again.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is from Wizard of Oz.
Wicked.
Also black and white, right? You know what I mean? So there's correlation there. I don't know. I just – De Niro doesn't do anything for me and I don't like him and I don't care – for his
in this
journey.
Performance. Oh, God. Performance.
Tom, should I say it? Can I say it?
Go on.
Isn't that the point?
I think that's – but it's like you can be not compelled by – the darkness of the character. You can be like,
there are lots
I
of characters
don't...
we don't like, right, in cinema, but
and
we are entertained. This is the whole point of cinema. And I know Scorsese is the one that's like, well, Marvel isn't cinema. at least it's entertaining, man. Like, pick one.
I would he prefers DC, to be fair.
Of course he does. He loves Jason Momoa.
Suicide Squad. That's my favorite. Scorsese's hard to do. I like DC. It's what I like to do. And it's like
yeah, you still sounds like a nasally.
Great impression.
I sound like Woody Allen.
You sound like every other nasally American.
You look
American.
Like Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Okay. I would pick entertainment over exploration of character.
Sure. Okay.
I don't always.
I would like both, right? Of course, I would like both. Yeah. But if that's the choice, I want something that's entertaining.
We are three seasons in. We're into our third season of this, and we
that's what being three
a
seasons
long
in means.
Time.
Way to explain it.
Just for the people.
That's just after
who
two.
Want to know. Stop
we
it.
We do 50 episodes?
Stop it. Oh, you hate being interrupted, Tom? No, continue.
Thank you.
Moo.
So.
Got him.
Cow joke?
Yeah.
Yeah, have you ever heard
everyone
of that?
Gets
the cheap
it.
Seats.
The listener gets
Speaking
it.
Of which, I have to throw in there, I love that Scorsese's obsessed with these stand-up comics that he puts in every single one of his movies that he bases in Little Italy. And just the guy sweaty on stage, like, I thought that was my best joke. Like,
hey, I'm doing like, this for you.
Oh, he's so good.
But then why is De Niro doing stand-up? It doesn't matter.
I mean, De Niro, we can get to that. But we're three seasons in. This is our third season. And so I want to point out that people who are observant have already noticed that we have distinct ways of watching things. Frank, you're more about probably entertainment and spectacle.
I just said that.
I think yes, popcorn cinema. That's what I'm just clarifying.
Call it as we see it.
Yes, it's, yeah. And Marcus, I think you're really tapped into performance. I think that's something you're a big fan of with acting. I also think, not to say that like you don't like composition or dialogue or anything, but you're big on, wow, this is a swing for this actor.
Oh, yeah.
And I like emotionality in movies. I'm very, very much locked in if something moves me. It doesn't even have to be something I find that like
which
thrilling.
Is not a hard sell because
everything
does.
Everything moves me. But I find...
Wait, so I'm the chump?
No one said that, but great choice of words.
You're like, oh, Frank, you just like watching crappy, bright-coloured films.
You'll hear that what I said was, you like to be entertained, and Mark's like, fucking popcorn cinema. And I'm like, that's not what I
is
said.
Is there not, am I, do I not Don't, contain multitudes?
Am I not a being entertained?
Am I not a being?
Frank, hang on.
Just feel a little
I will
bit
touch
attached
on that. No. Okay, so you are very good at identifying the same things that we all identify. You have a preference. Is what we're getting
at.
Yeah,
I don't think you're an
in terms of viewership.
Let's move on.
In terms of viewership, you have a preference of film.
Yeah,
is all we're saying.
We can move on.
Every point you've made about this movie, I think, is valuable. But it is fair to say that it's like,
of course it is. I'm just being a dick.
Fun. I enjoyed it. Is a big part of the thing. And
absolutely.
I'm like, it made me cry. Is my thing. And Marcus is like, do you know? You know?
Did you cry during Raging Bull?
100%.
When?
See, I didn't.
Here's the one note that I had that I chuckled at before is the. Why, punch the wall, why, God, why?
Yeah.
And then he misses his light. He sits down and is not lit. And I know, maybe it's intentional, but it's like, it's not even like half across his face. He's purely in darkness.
The Corey on that just
and
wasn't
he's
tight.
And he's sobbing and it's such a good take. And you're like, there's the acting, there's the Oscar moment, but I can't see your face, man.
Don't you think it's a moment where it would be too much for us to bear to see it?
No, it wouldn't. It would not be too much to bear.
Do you know
it
they did 19 takes of that? And so I
and
don't
that's
know
the right
if
one?
That is... And that's
that
what
makes
we did.
You so
it's
mad.
The Mr.
That
Burns thing. So we did 20 takes and that was the best one.
I think that's if that's making a statement, I don't like the statement.
That's fair.
I want like you talking about emotionality, it's like let us in. Let us
I find that
in.
Incredibly
I don't mind the darkness of it, falling into the darkness of it.
Yeah, I think
it might he's never in light. Yeah. He's never in light. Who gives a fuck? Let us see the acting.
Okay. I think that's a fair criticism. I find that scene very moving.
I found it moving too, but I was also disappointed.
But Tom, where did you cry?
That scene?
Really?
I find the scene where he...
Cry, punch.
Where he throws the match and then he goes back into the locker room and he's breaks down
yes,
over it.
That's a good
and
moment.
And it's to see the only thing that this man can be undone by is because it's that's his... This movie is about the fact that he's been conditioned to be good at this one thing and that one thing makes him incompatible with humanity because his thing is to... beat people to a pulp. Yeah. And so he's like, as long as I'm good at this, I have something. I have some, like, I have
and his
a foundation.
And his
yes, my dignity.
And,
I will never get knocked down. I know where I stand. I'm a man because I do this. And I don't think that's admirable, but that's very human. And yes, so when human. He throws and that
he,
away.
Because he throws the match right, but he doesn't not he doesn't ever fall down. And he goes over, he's like, you never got me down.
Yeah, with Sugar Ray right at the end, which is, oh God, that's such an upsetting. Like Sugar Ray's like, Jesus Christ, get away from me, you fucking ghoul. But yes, the scene we're talking about is where the mob have basically said, Tommy, who runs like the small town, Little Italy mob's like, he won't ever get a shot at the belt unless he throws a match and we can make money on it because we control the commission, essentially. And so Jake has to throw a match and he does it very obviously because he can barely fake because the guy he's fighting against is a bum. He's a bum. I tapped him like this and he fell over, you know? Mm. And when he just walks out of the ring and then it smash cuts to him just weeping, screaming, what did I do? And it cuts to that shot of his coach just crying, just like,
see that, that's what
don't broke, do it again anymore. That broke me don't out do of it. It again anymore.
That broke you out of
that
it.
That broke me out of it.
I was about to say that was a scene for me.
It was a good scene until the coach started crying and I went,
bro,
no, he's not. Really? He wasn't delivering.
I think he was.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
Comparatively to De Niro, he's not as good.
It was not as sincere, and I just it kind of took me out of it a bit. And I'm like, I wish we just stayed on De Niro.
To
me,
but you know, they did 19 takes,
and he's barely lit. His face crumples. That old man, in a way, where men like that who never cry, and when they do, they're so unselfconscious about it. Like he's not even thinking about how. Kind of,
it's past the point of control.
He's so uncinematic and so unglamorous about it.
He's very, he's very Claire Danes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
The prettiest crier in the world. Yeah. No, great. That scene's brutal. I find the scene, we're jumping all over the place. I find the scene where he sees Joey walking down the street at the end and he goes to try and apologize to him. I find that scene really, really hard. That really upsets me.
I mean, it's again, hard.
It's because he thinks he's had that moment. Why? He's had that moment in the jail cell where he's tried to shed his animalism, tried to shed his brutality and grasp and cling into whatever still makes him a human. And he thinks that maybe that's enough. That's a redemption. And Joey's like, I don't fucking care, man. Like that means nothing good. Which is exactly what he should do. Yeah, he shouldn't react.
I felt happy in that moment. I was like, good for you, Joe. Walk away.
I find that so.
It doesn't deserve it. It's like,
I agree. Yeah. I think someone pitifully begging for something that they don't deserve and haven't earned is a very, very like raw human thing. And a very like, it's almost despicable that he would ask Joey to forgive him and that Joey gives him a little bit at the end. He lets him hug him, but he's so, you've never seen Jake
I call you.
But you've never seen Jake like that the whole film. I said, Joey, we're brothers. Come on, Joey. And Joey, and like trying to hug him. And then like Joey barely looks at him at one, he's just like, come on, we're brothers. And Joey looks at him like, we're brothers. Like, oh, it's so, by the way, Joe Pesci is my favorite actor of all time. Gonna drop that right now.
You can't just drop that.
Joe Pesci is my favorite actor of all time. And I kind of.
You haven't even seen Home Alone, his best work.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean.
What do you mean?
Sure.
Man?
Yeah.
Sure. That felt so out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't realize it until I've seen this movie several times and it was watching it the other day. I was like, oh, whenever I watch Joe Pesci, I'm like, this
of
is the.
Of all time.
Of all time, he's my favorite actor. And like, that's based on.
He's so good, but I still can't.
That's based on five performances.
You've compared him to every actor.
Yep. I cannot believe you just said that.
Raging Bull, Goodfellas, Casino, The Irishman. It's four performances, and those are my favorite. And every single performance, I'm like, this is the best acting anyone has ever done, every time, without a doubt. And it's such a variation on a similar theme. He's always the diminutive, like, you know, scrappy. Your mother sucks cocks in hell, like, you know, yelling people. But in this one, he's the more likable of the two.
So he's done two versions of the same character.
No, he's that. And then in Goodfellas, he is one of the scariest human beings who is still recognizable.
I think he's pretty funny.
He's funny. He's hilarious in Goodfellas.
Funny how.
But yes, sorry, I apologize. I was on a tear.
No way.
He is funny in that, but in a way that's still recognizably human.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you've seen Casino, Frank.
Yeah,
I have. You have?
Yeah.
And you've
Robert De Niro runs a casino.
See, yeah, that's it.
Can you believe it?
Joe Pesci is
who fucking cares?
Like Satan in that movie. Like he's not even a human being anymore.
All right,
and it's so scary.
Okay, we are going on a tangent.
And then in
here.
The Irishman, he's this soft, beaten down, like past it gangster. And right. It's a brilliant performance.
That's fine.
Joe Pesci's amazing.
I believe you.
Yeah, Joe Pesci's great.
You're justifying something. I believe your point. I just don't get it.
You can't say, why are you justifying this when you guys are like, what the fuck? fuck are you talking about?
No, because like, well, hear me, hear me. Just listen. Use your ears. 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Of all the actors in the world in existence in history,
you've got Kevin Joe Spacey. Pesci. I've got Joe.
No.
Kevin Spacey, Johnny Depp,
and for the
fantastic
camera. No.
Oh, Army Hammer.
I love Kevin Spacey as an actor. Period. Full stop.
I've never seen you.
Is he my favorite in the world? No.
I've never seen you address the camera like
this. Well, yes. I have to.
Yeah, I think we need to put that as a clip.
We'll put it on a chiron like down the bottom. Kevin Spacey is Marcus's favorite actor.
Tom Butler, Joe Pesci is my favorite actor of all time.
Yeah.
Crazy that you would just say that. We've never heard that before.
I've never heard this
You've
until
never
now.
Heard you.
Yeah.
I've known you whole life.
I don't think I really.
Your whole life.
That's true. I don't think I really realised it until rewatching Raging Bull. I was like, oh, yeah, he's my favourite.
All right, anyway.
And I think he's bad in Home Alone.
Here's the thing. No, you don't.
No, I'm kidding.
You're watching Raging Bull where De Niro wins his first Oscar?
Oh, no. This is a different conversation.
We'll get it, but it's his second because he won for Godfather Part 2.
Oh, was that before this?
A few years earlier.
This is a different conversation. If you're saying who's better in this film, I'm going to say Joe Pesci.
I agree.
Okay.
But it's just weird.
I think Joe Pesci.
No, it's not weird.
I think Joe Pesci is the best performance in this film. And I think De Niro is amazing in this movie. It's Pesci.
Anyway.
Kathy Moriarty's incredible in this movie. Do you, can I ask Frank about that? What do you think of Kathy Moriarty? Her performance, the character?
The character's dumb. Why does she even go out with Jake to begin with?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you brought it up, but I want to hear your
They did 19 takes and he was at the fence and he was so boring and they went, that's perfect. He sits in a car and does nothing and he looks like shit. His nose is broken. He's an ugly man. It's like, why does she care? Oh, it's a nice car.
Can we?
Really? That's it?
Can I go? Or you
go? You go. I've talked a lot.
I want to know if we agree. This is more to the point.
I see
what you're saying, though.
I think she's a good actress. I think the performance is good. Sad to see.
She's so good.
She's 18 in this, and she's got that smoky, like Kathleen Turner voice where it sounds like she's smoked 50 cigarettes a day since she was 12.
She did.
She just has this incredible presence, which is wild that they just – I think Pesci saw her at like a beauty contest or something, or maybe he saw a photo at a disco, and he's like, yeah, her, let's put her in the movie.
Why is he
in
a beauty contest?
Pesci, just because he was entering, obviously. He won.
He's just perusing discos as well.
Perusing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I found interesting thinking about this time watching it, or what I found interesting, is that movies are really good at engaging with ideas. Movies are very good at engaging with ideas that I have no interest in talking about in real life. So if someone wants to go, you know, Elvis and Priscilla, when they met, she was very young. But, you know, sometimes stuff like that happens and I think we just have to account for the fact that love can transcend age. You know, R. Kelly, stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's not – I have no interest in those conversations. I think that's fucking toxic and awful. I think that's what movies are for. I think movies are really good at showing like a – I don't think it's fun to consider that in real life women can have – or find a man like Jake appealing or alluring, that they see this animalistic, raw, violent mayhem inside him and they're like, oh, that's sexy. I'm like, that's a toxic thing to talk about in real life. Yeah. It's a really interesting thing to show in a movie, to depict. Yeah.
Back to the answer.
That's my answer.
The answer
that
is
she's good actress. She's a good actress.
She's a good actress. Kathy do good. She, I think, as a young... very quietly confident girl. Like she's so still and composed.
The character is 15. Person. We should just put that out.
Yeah, yeah.
She's 15 and Jake's like late 20s, early 30s.
He's ugly. Like he's a broken nose, big whatever, bouldering man. But it's a power thing. It's all about power. It's all about his position and his confidence and that sort of weird magnetism that he's bringing to...
Yeah, I see that, but I don't.
She's unobtainable to him at this point. This is a thing that I wanted to talk about really quickly.
Please go
Yes,
on.
She's 15. Of course
she should be unobtainable.
But what I mean is his viewing of her is that she's a goddess, right? She is just like the peak of womanhood. Like I have to have her. Everyone wants her. I have to have her.
Yeah,
right?
Coveted. Yeah.
And so the problem, though, is with him, and this is one of his many, many flaws, is that, and it stems further than just his relationship with her, he's never satisfied. He's never happy with what he's got. Mm-hmm. He gets her. However that came to be, sure, it was just circumstance, luck, whatever. He got her. And all of a sudden he goes from, like, the Virgin Mary, the goddess, the whatever she is.
The Madonna, yeah.
The Madonna complex, right?
The Madonna whore complex,
yeah. And all of a sudden it's like, no. Now she's, I got her. That means she's probably been with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's sullied because what kind of woman would sleep? It's the Groucho Marx. Like, I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me, right? It's
yeah.
And it's, I think Ebert even talked about this when he reviewed it in the 80s. It's like, that is Roger. He talked about the fact that that's what he's engaging with, Scorsese. Mm. And this idea of Jake's, it's like she is this absolute seraphic like being that is so impossible for me to get. And the second I can be with her, you're absolutely right. It's like, well, then why would she do that? Why would she sleep with me?
But let me just quickly go back. What do you mean he can't get her? It takes him two scenes.
It's true, but it's like that kind of whole lead up.
It's mentioned that she dated someone else, so he can't date her. It's like, okay, I think, and then he does.
Do you want? And he's married.
And
as
he
well.
Leaves his wife immediately. Like, not there is no consequence. There is no challenge for him to overcome to be with her.
So you wanted to see more of the chase?
No, I don't really care. But I don't see the. I see what you're trying to say, but I don't think it translated to film of him like going like.
Can I just say this is an appalling. It's an appalling look at women. So like, it doesn't really give you a lot of time to work with her either. In saying like, I can see your transition to how you got there as well.
Yeah.
We don't get that. We just get that one scene and then boom, we're in.
And the movie is so subjectively locked in on Jake that it would feel a little bit out of sync with the rest of the film if it's like, let's learn more about Vicky. It's like, that's not really the movie.
No,
right?
It's
the
Jake's
movie
film.
Is about Jake he is and the his perspective. Bull. The thing is, those slow-mo shots in the film, which are just
my favorite scene in the film.
Captivating. I mean, I think.
Favorite scene in the film.
Wait, which one are you talking about?
Other than the opening scene.
Yeah.
The one where he's sitting in the club watching Vicky go over and say hello to the boys at the other table.
That's it. That happens with her. The first time he sees her, the very first time it's in slow-mo, when he watches her leave with Salvi and all the others and he goes outside and he watches her go past in the car in slow-mo and there's the whistling on the soundtrack. The slow-mo confers this like significance for him, that he's stopping time to spend more of it engaging with this presence, this woman, right? He's fixated on her in a way that just completely closes everything else out. And then that fixation and obsession and love or lust for her becomes encroaching, violent, putrid jealousy.
Yeah, the obsession is choking him.
And it's so subjective because my favorite thing about Scorsese's movies a lot of the time is he puts us in the minds of the characters to the degree that you're like, when she kisses Tommy goodbye, when he leaves the house, when Tommy comes to visit Jake before the final fight with Sugar Ray, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tommy kisses her on the lips.
Yes.
I don't think that happens. That's in Jake's. I think so much of this movie is in Jake's head.
It's
and
so
he's
interesting.
Adding that, like, why would you do that? Why would you why would you kiss him like that?
My,
why would you
my note
like
here
that?
Was quite literally, yeah, I'd be pissed too. There's a lot of kissing on the mouth
I
going on.
I don't think it happens. And I think it's the same where when he's in the ring with like the guy who he throws the match to and every single punch barely affects Jake, I'm like, I don't think that's real. I think this is a lot of stuff that we're getting from his perspective. This guy's a bum to him. The way that he beats Sugar Ray Robinson and sends him down at the start of the movie and yet he still loses. And he's like, I obviously won. It's like, did you, man? Or do you have a really one racist view of like other boxers? They use that like Italian term that's essentially the N-word whenever they refer to like the black people in this movie. But it's also just this like subjective way in which everything falls in line with his narcissistic and yet self-loathing view of things. Of course she's going to fucking cheat on me. Of course I'm better than these other boxers. Of course I'm the one. You know, this is all happening to me. I'm the center of this. And I think that putting us in that frame of mind and making it compelling is astounding. I get that it can feel really difficult to spend that much time with it.
Yeah.
But I find it like just...
It is exhausting. Yes, and because the tension continually and gradually builds throughout the film and it's not real. It doesn't let up.
No.
Is the other thing too.
It's so relentless for sure.
You have to hold on to it for 2 hours and 20 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a long time of just feeling far more uncomfortable each scene as it develops.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, I don't know. I just think this is such a great film.
I think so too. I think it's a fantastic movie, but I wouldn't put it past anyone to find it overbearing and not a fun hang.
Yeah.
So I
It's like you can't breathe. It's like you're underwater the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I say it's dad cinema because I know so many dads genuinely who love this film. What I find funny about that, though, is I don't think they see it the way I see it now.
I think that's true.
I think a lot of people have taken it at face value and just been like, it's such a great film. It's like, but why? I don't know.
De Niro. That's the thing, that there's this weight to De Niro, like in his career.
Yeah,
like,
he's pretty big in this movie.
Oh, you bastard.
We will talk. We should at some point talk about like some of the behind the scenes.
Well, I think we're about to get into the pantry because.
Yeah, do it. Why not?
Oh, okay.
Do we even. No. In a pantry with a mic. Don't worry about it. Forget about it. Sorry. That was a better line.
yeah, we'll put that in.
Forget about it.
That's good.
It was the most amount of weight fluctuation at the time that an actor had ever gone through.
Wow, 10 pounds.
It was only. It was wild. 60 pounds, I believe.
Did he actually put that in the phone booth when his gut's hanging out of the shirt?
None of that's. Any prosthetic. It's all De Niro, the whole thing. And
even more than Bale?
Even more than Bale. No, I think, I think it's been broken now, and it actually got broken by D'Onofrio for Full Metal Jacket. Because okay. he was, as we've said, like a pretty trim and like muscly before Full Metal Jacket. And the reason we think of D'Onofrio now as this hefty guy is because he put on all that weight for Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
But yeah, De Niro got down to boxing weight for this, something around like 65 kilos. And then he was a very good boxer. He trained with LaMotta for a long time. LaMotta entered him into 3 actual boxing bouts anonymously, and he won 2. So he was a very good boxer.
Wow, that's cool.
I mean, it's like I am again one of those people definitely who's like, did you know he really cut his leg off for this? And I'm like, yeah, it's a shit performance. I don't care. It's a good performance, so I'm a little more compelled by it, definitely. But I do agree some of that stuff's acting wank when it doesn't work. I don't advise anyone to put on 40 fucking kilos for a role. It was very unhealthy, the speed of time he did it in. Mm. He came back from Italy. He went to Northern Italy and went on like an eating fucking binge, came back and couldn't breathe. Like walked in the room and was just like.
I get it.
And Scorsese's like, oh my God.
I love Italian.
What have you done? Yeah. That much truly. It's like there are islands that aren't there anymore. I ate everything. Just like he just took out villages.
Too much. So unhealthy.
Fucked. Yeah, it's fucked. And yet I can't deny when you see it, when you see him in those scenes where he's in the mirror reciting and when he's at the clubs later, you're like, that is a different fucking person. Like that is crazy.
Wait. Yeah, but there's prosthetics in
The nose is prosthetic. That's it.
It's got to be the cheeks as well, sure.
That's his weight. That's how much weight he put on. The nose is the prosthetic in the movie. That's it.
The whole face looks so.
That is just him.
Wow.
Because he put on so much so quickly, it's just his body didn't know how to react.
Oh,
it was just like.
Because it looks cake.
Yeah, that's it.
It looks really unnatural.
He was full of cake. There's nothing to be done about it.
Holy shit.
Because I didn't recognize him. As soon as it went to the scene in the club where he's rehearsing the line, which is just after the
you're like, that's
credits.
Colin Farrell in The Penguin, right?
Honestly, I was like, who's that? Oh, that's. And it took me a second to realize it's De Niro. He looks terrible. I hate it.
It's crazy that he did it. He was a man who was very committed. I think it resulted in a great performance. Again, one of those things where we always
I don't think putting weight on made the performance great. The boxing training, of course, that's good. Like you've got to be involved and understand what it feels like to take a punch. But
He used it in an interesting way. Again, it is one of those things where I always feel a bit. We talked about it with The Exorcist, where there are things in that movie that there were performances achieved through very dickish moves by Friedkin, not telling the actors what was going to happen. He got a good shot. I don't know if that's worth it, right?
Yeah, like, you could get the same shot with prep with your actors.
Yes.
You could rehearse the scene.
There is a way maybe to have De Niro get a bit bigger and wear prosthetics, but he didn't want to do that. So that was his.
Do you think there's a bit of development here for, say, Tony Soprano?
In terms of, I think so.
Like, now that I've seen obviously both, I can see how you can take the self-sabotaging and the self-loathing and the obsessive sort of behavior and compulsions and acting upon impulse.
Yeah.
Really Tony Soprano. And I can see how he would have taken parts of that possibly.
Yeah. Every Sopranos character has never watched a movie that wasn't directed by Scorsese. Like they have only ever watched Scorsese films. Like they've seen New York, New York. But they haven't seen anything else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so speaking of New York, New York, to get into some of the pantry stuff. Scorsese was in a bad place, right? Scorsese had made Taxi Driver. He was like this new guy on the block in the mid-70s. And then he made New York, New York, which is a movie I'm not sure if you guys have seen.
No, but I know about this.
The news.
Yeah. I was really into Scorsese as a teenager and they showed New York, New York at CMAX in Devonport. Okay. And I begged mum to take me.
Sure.
And she was like, you're not going to like it. And I was like, no, it'll be fine. And we walked out. I was like, you might've been onto something.
Yeah.
Like, and so, I'd like to watch
so
it
now. So
that's
the one where Liza sings.
It's Liza and De Niro and he sings a little in it, but he mostly plays saxophone.
Am I right in saying
did he
that
learn
it
saxophone
wasn't
for it?
I don't think so. No, he put put on some weight for it, but he didn't learn the sax. Yeah,
was the film not
very badly received?
Yeah, received.
People were just is this from the guy who just made like the definitive dark urban nightmare of Taxi Driver?
Yeah.
Now it's like you're making quasi musicals with Liza, and then he made a documentary about the band breaking up called The Last Waltz. And he fell into this sort of pit of cocaine and just, you know, he was an asthmatic man, Scorsese. He's not been a very healthy guy. It's kind of remarkable he's made it to 80. And he like collapsed while he was somewhere in high altitude in the like late 70s. He was bleeding like all through his body. And the doctors told him basically, you have lost the ability to form platelets. You're going to die of a fucking brain hemorrhage if we don't fix you like now. Hey, stop doing cocaine. And he was like, yeah, okay, I could give that a shot. So he was recovering, but he was like, I don't think I want to make movies anymore. It's kind of killing me. None of this is working. And De Niro showed up at his bedside table at the hospital and was like, do you want to live? Because if you want to live, and he handed him the Raging Bull book for apparently like the fifth time, was like,
I think he's tried.
Fucking movie.
Yeah.
And Scorsese was like, no, I decided I might as well try and make it. But he thought this was going to be his last movie. He's just like, that's it. I'm going to pour everything into this. This is my swan song.
Which is done with this. Insane to consider.
To consider 45 fucking years ago.
Can you imagine what we would have missed out
Goodfellas,
on?
Goodfellas. He was like, this is my last movie. Oh. And that's why he
wasn't feeling good, fellas.
Fellas. It's why he put all his energy into it. And it has that like last swing of a guy who still has the stamina to kind of go out swinging, but at the same time feel like, I'm putting everything into this, guys. Like, I don't have anything left in me after this. And there's a very funny story that I love about how I think Pesci at one scene is ordering some cutty sark at the bar, some whiskey, and he's like, they're editing it. It's got to be ready to show in 2 days. And they've got Irvin Wickloff, I think, or someone in the room with them who's a producer. And they're trying to get the sound right because Scorsese's like, I can't hear him. I can't hear what he's saying. I need to be able to hear that he's saying cutty sark, cutty sark. And they're trying to fix it. And the producer goes, Marty, I think it's good. We've got to send it out. And Scorsese stands up and goes, take my name off the fucking picture, and walks out of the room. And they're like, God damn it. Like, they have to convince him, all right, we'll fix it. He's like, no, take my name off it. I don't want it to go out. And it's like a perfect movie, in my opinion, or like a very good movie, that doesn't have that one line in it. And he just refused. He was like, I'm not attaching my name to this swill if we can't fix that.
Because cutty sark isn't even like a good...
He just wanted to be able to hear it. He's like, if I can't hear it, that's not what's in my mind.
I don't think it's about the line.
No, it was very much... it was almost like he was trying to get fired. Like he was trying to show, like push his weight too far.
Wow, self-sabotaging. That's weird.
It's crazy.
Like is he the raging bull?
An Italian-American. It's... Paul Schrader wrote some of it with them, who's the guy who wrote Taxi Driver. Before that, a guy called Mardik Martin wrote a lot of drafts for it. He kind of walked away because he didn't know what else to do because they didn't like his. But they kind of just formed it around this idea of like, we don't want a biopic. We want to open with this guy at the end of his career, like bloated, rehearsing these terrible fucking like...
Can I talk about
lyrical
that?
Pieces. It's so funny. I just want to say the one thing, and that is when he goes like... He's saying, I'd much rather hear me recite Shakespeare, a horse, my kingdom for a horse. I haven't had a winner in 6 months. And then lights his cigar.
Yeah.
And he's like, even he's like, that's a shitty punchline. But like, he just doesn't, the lack of energy.
So, but what is he doing?
The mirror scene where he's reciting these lines, right? Yeah. Because I had to look it up because I was like, what's this from? I have no idea. Apparently it's a Brando film. It's an actual Marlon.
Oh, at the very end of the movie.
At the very end of the film. Yeah, he's doing a different scene.
He's doing on the waterfront at the end.
On the waterfront,
yes.
Yeah,
but at the start when he's doing the...
No. But my question is, why is he doing stand up at a club?
It's just like,
It's an exposure thing. I need to have some sense of self-worth or some sort of power
He was a brand, right? He's just like, this is my thing now. I'm an entertainer. I can't do the boxing anymore.
If people don't know me, what am I worth?
By the way,
way to ruin a reputation.
The funniest cut in the movie. Not a particularly funny movie, but there are a couple scenes I laugh. And one I laugh at is where he's by the pool. He's put on all the weight. The interviewer's asking him like, so what are you going to do now? He's like, I don't want to do any of that stuff anymore. Yeah, I did that. It's a young man's game, but I'm going to open a club. You know what it's called? Guess what it's called. I want you to guess what it's called. What do you think it's called? Smash cut to Jake LaMotta's.
Yeah.
It's just like, great name, man. Yeah. Like, where'd you come up with that? It's pretty good.
I think the thing that bugs me about De Niro is the cadence of how he speaks and how he delivers lines. It's never changed, and I find it really, it's repetitive, right? I imagine that's written as, sure. I want you to guess what it's called. I reckon that's the line on the page. Just once.
And he maybe does it.
And he does it four times.
Yes. Yeah. That is the looseness of a Scorsese thing, though. The dialogue feels very un...
But that's... But
yeah,
De Niro,
but you
done,
know, like...
De Niro's done that
every
same
actor
thing.
Has their thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sorry, I like some of them I don't. Yeah, I don't like De Niro's tick of repeating a line in slightly different variations, and it's like, that's... What are you achieving? You're wasting tape.
I don't know if he always does this, but that's a pretty good example in this movie he does.
And
I
constantly in this movie.
It's a movie about inarticulate people. It's a movie about people who every second word or every second line is, you know what I mean? Or what are you doing? What are you talking about? Like, they don't have a lot of variation.
This is a nice one for me to jump back to, right? Because you've seen how Hollywood has taken De Niro for being De Niro, and they just copy and paste him into certain films and they go, we need a De Niro.
He's in one right now.
Let's get De Niro.
You know what they've done? Copy paste. Two De Niros. Alto Nights. You guys seen it?
No.
It's the one that's out right now. He plays twins.
Oh my god.
And it's just De Niro? De Niro.
De Niro
DeFerro. I'm gonna watch it. I've heard it's terrible. Okay. I can't wait.
Bad grandpa.
Finally, De Niro and De Niro together.
That's
what we've all been missing.
Anyway, my point is, again, going back to him being very understated with this role, I find that, yes, he'll have those cadences. He'll have those repeat sort of behaviours. Mm. This is early in his career. And by the way, I think this is a better film than Taxi Driver.
I do too.
Yeah. But he does this. He does it really well in this. And then in certain other films, it's embellished and it's played on and it's utilised. And so you're getting the long-term De Niro sort of depiction of this.
Yeah, the fatigue of it.
Of course.
But I look at other directors who might be like, we want De Niro for this, and they would let him just run the tape, right? They would let him just do the lines. Oh, yeah, wow, it's De Niro at work. He's a master. I want him to say it five times in different ways. Mm. When it's like, respect the writer. I've said this a few times. It's like, what's the line on the page? I know improv can sometimes bring something magic to a scene and something fresh and new and exciting, but De Niro's not improvising. He's just...
I do get that. I'm pretty bad at that. I get told off all the time for not sticking to the script. That's just one of my habits, and
really?
I don't do it intentionally. Just want to say, but I'm bad when it comes to being word perfect. I do add my ums and my isms and my whatever.
Ums and
it.
Isms are fine. Saying it four times is not.
No, I get
not
that, but then you can't. I think that's a really harsh criticism to give an actor and saying stick to the script, because some of the greatest moments in cinema have not been sticking to the script.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
You talking to me?
Which is what he's doing, and that's his bit.
But imagine if the writer came to set and said, no, not in my script.
Yeah, Paul Schrader's like,
get the fuck out.
That's not great. It's
I understand that. That's what I just said. Improv can sometimes bring magic to a scene.
Yeah.
But De Niro does the same kind of improv or variation for the length of his career.
I don't agree with that. But
I wouldn't necessarily.
You could track it for the last 40 years.
I think there is bad.
It's not in every film. It's not in every scene.
I think there's bad De Niro, you're right. And there's De Niro where the director doesn't know how to rein him in, it's De Niro. And it's the same with Pacino, right? They're too scared to do anything. But I don't think if you like run your finger along the arc of De Niro-Scorsese collaborations, I don't think there's much repetition in there. I think he's always a very different guy. And sometimes this is the biggest example, I agree with you, in Raging Bull, where he doesn't really, like, especially the scene at the beginning with his wife, where he's like, I got no choice. I got no choice. Like, he's just saying shit like
saying
that over
the same
and over.
Thing over
I love. I the other thing I find funny in this movie is, what are you doing? Cooking the steak like that? Don't cook overcook. It defeats its own purpose. And you're like, what does that mean? Like, that's the most nonsensical thing I've ever.
It isn't, man. I love that.
It's
scene.
It's a perfect line, but it is definitely one of those.
How dumb he is.
He's dumb.
Yeah,
you know.
Fine.
And it's, I like.
I hate that it made sense to me though.
It makes sense.
Just, what
in
are you
a very,
doing?
Like,
its purpose is to be eaten the way it's designed to be eaten.
Yeah, but right? She's defeating the purpose
of
it.
No, I know.
It defeats its own purpose.
He doesn't know what cooking a steak is. No. Like, this is the thing. It's like, you've never cooked a steak, De Niro. Like, it's that time in his life where the woman does all the cooking. He's just yelling at her because he wants
to. He can.
To,
because he can.
Because he has rage and aggression and he wants to be in control. Yeah. That's what that is. And
can
it's
I,
like.
Back on your criticism, though, of his. Can we, for the argument of this, for the sake of this argument, sorry, can you just put the lens on of you are in 1980 and you've only seen Robert De Niro up until this point. Because I think your criticism stems from repeated behaviours in all of his films following this.
He's nothing like that in The Godfather Part 2. I mean, to start with, it's an all-Italian role and he's a very measured.
Yeah, because he's also playing someone else. Like, it's based on Marlon's performance.
Oh, right. Sorry. I thought you meant like he's playing a different character. I'm like, yeah, he does that in all his movies.
He's not.
He's basing it on like a younger version of Vito Corleone.
Who had already set the cadence, had already set the rhythm and the characterization.
He's so good in The Godfather.
But these, yeah, absolutely.
This
fantastic.
Is not a behavior I've seen repeated in a lot of films. Like, I'm racking my brain now thinking, yeah, I think you've got a point.
But now you'll see it. I promise you.
He's not like that in Heat. You know, he's not like that.
Yeah, there are directors who have, that's Michael Mann, right?
That's Mann, yeah. I don't even think he's like that in Meet the Parents, right? You know, I think he's weirdly.
Are you going to milk me? How are you going to milk me? You going to milk me, Jeff? What's his name? You going to milk me, Ben Stiller? Whatever he said.
He just calls him Ben.
Fucker.
Yeah, he absolutely does it in Meet the Parents. Are you kidding me?
What you going to do, fucker?
Okay. I've never seen the Analyze This or Analyze That movies. So maybe.
Billy Crystal, they're fun.
Who knows? Right.
But that's De Niro's comedy era.
But this is great when he doesn't
know those are comedies. No. Don't tell him.
when he's playing the straight man in that era, that's great stuff. He's funny, man.
Yeah, he's pretty good in this. I can see your point that the reason you can do a good impression of De Niro, that anyone can do a pretty good impression of him, is because he has that familiar rhythm and cadence. Marcus made the point that so does Walken, so do a lot of actors.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I see it on some level. I want to really quickly just shout out that Thelma Schoonmaker edited this. And she's edited every. She won the Oscar, so did De Niro, obviously. And she's edited every Scorsese movie since. And I love her editing. She is just so amazing at taking what I can imagine are these long, just huge takes of actors going back and forth, repeating themselves, kind of falling into these weird recursions of dialogue, and she finds a way through it for me in any way she threads that needle.
Yeah, you would love to see her at work, right? Because it would be hours and hours of footage,
yeah.
And she'd be like, there's the moment, pick that moment, cut that.
And she's
that. And like you said, the smash cut to...
Yeah,
Jake's Club.
There's also another one where it's like when Joe Pesci and Salvi, who's Frank Vincent, by the way, who's great in this as well, and him and Joe Pesci started together as a comedy duo. So that's that. Those guys actually know each other very well. When they're walking back to the house at the start, and he's like, look, I'll ask Jake. I just got to see. I don't know if he's in a good mood. And it's smash cuts upstairs. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Just yelling at his wife. And it's like, yeah, she's Thelma and Marty have a good sense of humor. Thelma Schoonmaker... I don't know a lot about her. I've seen a couple of interviews, but she strikes me as this very sort of soft-spoken, just very demure, and, she's the same age as Scorsese, so this older woman now. And I just love the idea of this old woman hunched over an editing thing while these men are just going fuck your mother. Get the fuck out of here with your little shriveled purple dick. And she's just let's take that again. And she's just rewinding and weaving all this stuff together.
I'm so
jealous.
Unassuming.
I'd
love to be a fly on the wall for that process.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine being able to sit there and watching someone pick the best moment?
And the moments where De Niro breaks and it's what was that Marty? What do you think of that, Marty? Do I have to fix that? And it's the way that Marty and De Niro talked about Killers of the Flower Moon, where apparently every now and then Leo would try doing some improv and throwing some things out there and the set would go quiet. And Marty from just behind a monitor would go, yeah, we don't need that, Leo. You don't need to do that. It's just the idea of a shot of Leo crestfallen just being like, all right, that's fine. I'd love to see that.
He tried.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? What are you
gonna do? We can't all be improvers like De Niro.
I guess we should jump into MVP.
Yeah, we should, absolutely.
I mean, I think we've done it.
Joe Pesci?
It has to be Joe Pesci.
I mean, it's Scorsese for me, but Pesci as the actor, yes. I think Kathy Moriarty's great. I think De Niro's great.
I think
It's Scorsese.
Definitive answer. Thanks.
Going back on what you were saying before about Pesci, though, Tom, is I don't see – this is the first time that I've really noticed a huge, significant difference in terms of performance from him, whereas to me Joe Pesci is Joe Pesci in a lot of what he does. And it's just different sort of levels of it, whereas this was really, really underplayed and still and beautiful. And
it's so measured and it's beautiful.
So measured. Measured's a great word. Yeah, of course.
Have you seen The Irishman?
I have. And The Irishman was whatever. I was like, this is way too long. This is whatever. This film is great. I enjoyed it. Will I watch it again? Probably not. Have I seen this 1,000 times over? I kind of feel like I have because the recipe to success, let's be honest, is just putting De Niro and Pesci in a film together. you can't argue the facts.
I think that's you true, can. But it helps when Scorsese's behind the camera.
Of course, but like their dynamic alone is great, and I think that this is the first time I've seen a very different dynamic with those two.
Yeah, it was nice to see.
And it was a real yin and yang performance.
It switches. The funniest thing is him and Frank Vincent. Because, as I said, they're like, they know each other from way back. Sure. And in this movie, they're buddies at the start, and then he beats up Frank Vincent Salvi in the club when he sees him with Kathy Moriarty. In Goodfellas, Frank Vincent is Billy Bats, famously, and they go to the bar, and Billy Bats says to Joe Pesci, "Now go get your fucking shine box." And Joe Pesci's like, "Motherfucker," and comes back and kills him ruthlessly. And then in Casino, Frank Vincent beats Joe Pesci to death in a cornfield with a baseball bat.
It's great.
A crazy, like,
nice
dynamic
trilogy.
Yeah, it's
them.
Amazing.
They
for
must
them.
Love that, though.
Oh, I mean, it's so great. And it's again, great. Being like comedians from way back.
And this is the thing, it's like, that's what's fun to see in, like, it's like the Brat Pack of Scorsese films is they've all worked together, they've all done different variations of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would be having a great time.
Yeah.
Even though De Niro seems like a sour man, it's like, I'm sure they're still having a good time.
And then
time
the poor Leo's crawling through trying to just keep up and they're
hey
like,
"Hey guys,
okay,
I'm here." Yeah. I want an Oscar for The Revenant.
Who are, by the way, doing a great job. Like if you're, can you imagine the pressure on you to be working in that dynamic as
and
well?
He's amazing in Killers of the Flower Moon,
yeah.
Leo.
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean, I love that movie.
Do you know my favorite thing about Pesci in this film though?
Tell me.
In terms of character more so, is that every time he starts a fight or especially with that big club scene where he's just,
yeah, with
every self. Fight he breaks out, he's the first to scramble out of it.
Yeah.
He disappears. He starts a fight in one pocket, boom, he's gone. And no one even knows he's gone. It's just, it just continues.
And yet as Salvi tries to get away, he keeps restarting the fight.
Restarting the fight. Like, just Salvi starts a new pocket.
And he pulls him into the car and starts slamming the door at him. You're like,
and then all of a sudden there's a fight in the street and then he clambers over the car and disappears again. Like he just, it's chaotic and so funny. He's like a little rat.
He's amazing. Yeah. He's my favorite actor of all time.
Ah, weird. That's still weird.
It's great.
Oh, wait. Am I going to throw anything in?
Go on.
Yeah, what? Go on. Only one person may.
Yeah, I'll go up to a... I still don't like it.
That's fair.
For what? Like a whole point, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
I'm staying on a 10. I wish... I love this movie. It's not my favorite, Scorsese.
There we go. What is? Thanks for listening to Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name is Tom. We're a bunch of good fellas.
Is that your favorite Scorsese?
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Oh, never mind.
No, it doesn't matter.
All right.
No,
I don't have the time.
Send us an email, throwingthepower@gmail.com.
Yeah. Or is that it? Is that where we... Wait, no, you go.
Read your boo.